This is Center Stage Minnesota. I'm Charlie Polkerbeck. I'm going to be your host for this edition of Center Stage Minnesota. Coming up in today's show, we've got a feature on musician, roots musician, self-taught guitar player and singer-songwriter Charlie Parr. And he's really something else. There's a reason why he's garnered so much attention. And probably what doesn't seem like a short time when you're him and you're doing all the work, but really he has really built a profile for himself or built a following of fans, and just about every musician in the state would probably consider themselves a fan of Charlie Parr as well. We'll get to that interview with Charlie Parr, and it is a good one, shortly. First, we're going to hear something from the 2011 release from a friend of Charlie's and someone who basically he encouraged her to be someone who really jumped out there and went for it with her musical career rather than being someone who, you know, played for friends and herself. Here's Colleen Meyer with her title track from a 2011 release, Ride of My Life.
Sky of blue, clouds so white, perfect day for a ride, for a ride. Feet are down, arms are straight. Thank you.
race. I could not recognize his face. He struck me once, and I rose from my seat to run. On that lone park bench seat.
That's Charlie Parr. I Was Lost Last Night from When the Devil Goes Blind. And then before that, we started the show today on Center Stage Minnesota with Ride of My Life. It's the title track to Colleen Myers' 2011 release. You heard it here on Center Stage Minnesota. This is Center Stage Minnesota. Center Stage Minnesota is an original series produced by Northern Community Radio and broadcast on the stations of Ampers. Find us online at kaxe.org. Program support comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I'm Charlie Polkerbeck. I'm your host for this edition of Center Stage Minnesota, and glad to be so. Charlie Parr grew up in Austin, Minnesota, with the town and the Hormel factory, where his mother and father both worked on one side, and where he lived in soybean fields as far as the eye could see on the other. From hearing the factory whistles blow each morning to, as Charlie Parr puts it, my mom and dad coming home from work, their smocks covered with paprika and gore, Charlie Parr took in blue-collar life. His father listened to a lot of the roots musicians that you'll hear more about in this interview. A self-taught musician, Charlie Parr, will never tell you about how good he is. Only everybody that has witnessed a performance by Parr will play that role. Here is my conversation that I recently had with Charlie Parr. You began recording music around the year 2000 or a little before, is that?
Yeah, 1999.
You have a persona that appears or seems both visually and in your music, and maybe just almost in... I'm not sure, the archetype that you seem to feel seems older than that, or older than that would indicate, or did you start late?
Well, yes and no. I started When I was a little kid, my dad got me into music really early, and he bought me a guitar when I was 7. I didn't have any kind of interest in like performing. I didn't write songs. All I really wanted to do was to learn how to play, like, you know, the records that I heard in the house growing up, records like Lightnin' Hopkins, for example, Mance Lipscomb, you know, early country western records of Jimmy Rogers, and folk records of Woody Guthrie, who's my mother's favorite, you know. I wanted to learn how to play the guitar like that. That's all I cared about, you know. And that's what I did, is try to learn how to play, and it didn't take any lessons, so it was a kind of a painstaking process. But so, yeah, when I was, you know, and I'm only 46 now, but it didn't occur to me to really start writing songs or playing them for anybody in particular until I was well into my 20s. And then it was even slow, because I didn't start writing songs until my late 20s when my dad passed away, and I started writing songs kind of to try to deal with my grief about that. And I performed once in a while, but didn't really find any particular enjoyment in it, because I was, you know, I was playing songs that every other, you know, acoustic kind of blues-inspired player is going to play, you know. And until I started playing my own stuff, I didn't get really excited about performing.
Picked up a little dog, finally made it down the banks, old man. Snow was coming, you could see the cold hanging in the air, hanging in the air, man. Hang the lines in the trees about there now. Stretch our tarp from the corner in the air. Never mind. Build us a fire and a pail to give us light now. Lost light. With his blanket round his face like a shawl, he made it down the rail with his dog, and he touched the kids for some cash. He fished his dinner out the trash. I said, low. Hang the lines in the trees about there now. Stretch our tarp from the corner in the air. Dig me a hole in the pasture. Never mind. Build us a fire and a pail to give us light now. Lord, it's light. He made camp about 3 a.m. Fire down with some friends, shared around the little bit they had, slept off the haze throughout the day, with his head in his duffel bag now. Hang the lines in the trees about there now. Stretch our tarp from the corner in the air. Never mind. Build us a fire and a pail and give us a light now. Lord, give us light. We all live in the very same place. And when he woke up, it was the same day. And he built up the fire and he sat down to wait. Just like today. Hang the lines in the trees about the night. Stretch our tarp from the corner in the air. Dig me a hole in the pasture. Never mind. Build us a fire and a pail. Give us light now. Lord, Lord, give us light.
Recorded at the studios of KAXE Grand Rapids. That's Charlie Parr, Just Like Today. And we're going to continue on with that conversation that I had with Charlie about him and his music. The conversation with Charlie and I continues.
It's been pointed out that you focus on mortality quite a bit in your music. Is that just what feels natural for you, or are you inhabiting a genre that you admire?
I don't know. Well, maybe I'm not. I haven't really thought about it that way. I guess a lot of the stuff that I love to listen to is kind of obsessed with death, murder ballads, and so, you know, those old songs that were overly concerned about that stuff. And I, in a way, I am too. You know, I think because my songwriting was kicked off by my dad passing away, you know, it's always kind of been the centerpiece. You know, before he died, I didn't have any need to write songs, because I was perfectly happy and contented. And I don't, you know, when I'm happy, when I'm satisfied, there isn't any pressing need to write a song in me, you know. It's only when I'm frightened or when I'm sad that I feel like something needs to come out, and that's what comes out, for better or for ill. I mean, that's just the way I'm built.
So it's more of a compulsion out of you sort of working through things in your life than it is stepping out and saying, I'm going to create a piece of art today.
Yeah, I think it's more personal than that. I've never really thought about it at all. You know, like I said, I'm not trained in any way. I didn't take any lessons or go to any kind of place to, you know, that's given me a lot of bad habits to kind of work through in both my songwriting and my guitar playing. You know, as I'm as surprised as anybody that this is what I do. You know, I don't have a job. I haven't had a job now in 9 years. This is what I do, you know, besides raise my kids and mow the lawn and walk the dog. You know, this is the thing that I do. And it's as much of a shock to me as it is to anybody else that I'm not, you know, trained for this kind of work. So I'm going off of a real kind of personal level most of the time.
Even though that may have made it a little tougher for you along the way at times, are you able to point to aspects of being self-taught that have maybe set you apart or have become an advantage for you in your musicianship?
I don't know. I mean, the fact that I didn't have any other way, I didn't do it any other way, so I don't really know what it would have been like to really know what I was doing. I mean, I'm friends with a lot of guitar players who do know what they're doing, and it's fascinating because, you know, they have a much larger kind of store of things to call upon when they want to make a sound. You know, they know a lot more, and they can make the sound with a lot more resources, you know, and I don't know that much. So if I want to make a sound, I have to play with the guitar until I hear stuff that comes close and then keep working at it till I get it. So it's not very efficient the way I do it. It's inefficient. So I don't know. I mean, I wish that if I could go back, I guess that's one thing that I might do, is to learn how to do all this stuff in the kind of the right way, if there's a right way, and see, you know, if that made a difference. And maybe it would make a bad difference. I don't know. Some people have told me that would take away a certain thing that there is there now that might not be there if I learned how to do things.
Yeah, I could definitely see agreeing with that. It's one of those things where maybe you found something that others didn't find, whatever that may be, because all kind of came down the same path when you
right.
maybe wandered a little bit more or something.
I wandered a lot. My earliest kind of trying to play the guitar was, you know, sitting in front of the record player with a record that I wanted to, you know, like, okay, I want to play a song like Mads Lipscomb, for example, one of my very favorite records when I was 7 years old. In addition to a lot of music, we listened to a lot of music in our house, but that one, for guitar playing, that record kind of captured me. And I sit in front of the speakers with my guitar, listening to a song, and you know, kind of strumming on my guitar and changing the tuning of it, because it didn't sound like the record, obviously. So I ended up not learning how to play in standard tuning for a long time, because I was playing in open G, which at the time I wasn't really aware of, but that's what Mance was playing in on the record. And so I tuned my guitar so that it sounded like his, and then I could kind of strum away at it and then find the changes, you know. And a lot of the times there were no changes, because in some of the music that I love the most, they don't have chord changes per se, you know. They have shift changes or mood changes, especially with Bottleneck stuff, you know. There's oftentimes not a chord change in there, you know. You just playing a G for 2.5 minutes or whatever. And so I was, you know, I sat there, and it's painstaking to sit there and figure stuff out that way. But the one benefit that it did give me is now I can listen to a piece of music and I can kind of see in my head how I would play it on the guitar. Now, how I would play it. I would never presume to tell anybody else how to play the song, but I could see myself playing it in the way that I play.
Get my feed for free, and ain't that the way it is? Well, I cut out down the gravel road, and I traded my stock for a V8 Ford. My dad's 410-9 on the floorboards, and the title rolled down to me, boys. That gasoline ain't free, this clutch is wearing out my knee, and ain't that the way it is? But a brother told me, bust my jaw. I talked to his sister again. Told me I wouldn't win, and there's blood running out of my chin. Now, ain't that the way it is? So I spent all night on the barroom floor. I woke this morning, my head was sore. My pockets empty, but I want some more. And barman, he got my call. Tabs worth more by far. And I leave it down at the bar and say, ain't that the way it is? A job on a family farm, but times are hard, and I can't roam, and I ain't got nothing more. Oh, the company store, the roads are looking good for sure, but ain't that the way it is? Well, I worked all summer, couldn't save a cent. I gave all of my money to the government. I don't know quite how I got spent, but the bank's coming for my deed, boy. Man at the mill can't see, boy. Let me get my feet for free, boys. Ain't that the way it is?
As far as I know, that's probably Charlie's, it's an older one from one of his, from his 1922 release. It's called 1922 Blues. That's another performance from, that he
performed right in front of me. I felt extremely fortunate to be an audience of one that afternoon at the KAXE studios. More conversation with Charlie Parnell.
Your voice is kind of an enigma, at least to me. When I'm listening to you, I first feel the gravel and grit, and maybe that comes from the genre as much as your voice. But there's also this penetrating purity to your voice that after I sit back and kind of think about what I'm actually hearing, that's what seems to be out in front more.
Well, thank you. It's a nice compliment. I've never thought of myself as a singer, you know, kind of in the same way about the guitar playing, but, you know, singing for me has gotten easier in the last few years. I had some health problems a few years back, and I ended up having to change some lifestyle things about myself, and lost some weight and changed a lot of my diet. And since that happened, my voice, I think I found a deeper place for my voice to come out of, if that makes any sense. My posture's improved, and weird little things like that have made it easier for me to sing. And I feel like now I can kind of play with my voice in a way that I couldn't do before, when it felt like I was just kind of forcing it out all the time, you know, just to kind of get through a song, because I was trying to concentrate on what I think is the important part, is the guitar playing, you know, when actually, you know, they're both, you know, important parts of the song, obviously. And I think I finally kind of get that.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of there's the when a voice gets to a certain point of quality, it becomes the more important instrument in almost any act. And I would definitely say that yours is in that area. It feels like there's intensity, but it's relaxed at the same time. It feels sort of like really cold water or something, or just really, you know, like a mountain stream when the snow is running off it or something. Just has this really excellent quality to it.
Thank you.
There's so much going on in your songs. There's lots of activity and their movement, though they are based on traditional blues and folk type of structures, and I end up feeling like I'm hearing more of an adventure, sort of like an improvisational jazz or something like that. So as you describe yourself, how does one man and one guitar with one foot in the grave manage to be working so many layers and producing so much sound in your songs?
I think when I was young and listening, the music that I listen to the most, the music that I'm kind of inspired by the most, is usually solo artists like Charlie Patton, for example, or Booker White, who's one of my favorites, to John Fahey or Jack Rose, Spider John Kerner, you know, Dave Ray, Dave Van Ronk, you know, those guys mostly played alone, and they filled in all the gaps, you know. And when I think about playing a song or anything, you know, I think about that. Even when I'm playing with other people, you know, I end up trying to fill in all the gaps, because that's what I've been influenced by. And hopefully it works most of the time. You know, I think there's a balance that I struggle to strike between overplaying because of that, wanting to fill in all the gaps, you know, and getting the kind of the tempo just right, so that you're doing it, but you're letting people absorb what the song is about. And that's my constant struggle, because I want people to understand what the song is about, you know, because it might be something that they like.
Summer when the corn was fully grown, we'd gone for a swim in the pond of my Uncle Henry's farm. When we got home, we saw a badger in the yard, running flat out for a hole beneath the shed. And he disappeared into his den underneath the floor, and he was gone, and my dad just said, "God damn, badger can't stay, he'll kill you just like that. That mean as any grizzly, son, sneaky as any cat." And he went and got his gun from the closet in the hall, and pulled a six-pack from the fridge, and he walked on out the door. Thank you. Well, Mom made us brush our teeth and get ourselves to bed. It's late, and he'll be a while, was all that she would say. And I saw him in the twilight, his 410 across his lap, sitting in a lawn chair, staring at the shed. Fallen soldier from the six-pack was laying at his feet. Sometime in the night, a gunshot woke me from my sleep. It was late in the summer when the corn was fully grown. We'd gone for a swim in the pond on my Uncle Henry's farm.
Absolutely haunting short song there called Badger, simply Badger. It was on his release called Barn Swallow, which came out last year. That's Charlie Parr, and he also performed it at the studios of KAXE.
You seem really attracted to mystery, or maybe if I could say it better, incomplete stories. And to draw an analogy, I would say, like, for example, one of your influences and somebody that you've covered, Doc Boggs, like many musicians of that area, where, you know, he's a coal miner as much as he's a performing musician, and his biography has more gaps than it has information. You know, is that kind of mystery sort of like a ghost town where you see just part of what's going on or what has been? Does that hold a lot of interest for you? Or
that's, yeah, absolutely. Hit the nail right on the head. And especially with Doc Boggs and some of the songs that he brought along. You know, there's that kind of idea that people talk about when they're talking about, you know, like scary stories or stuff like that. Your mind is more capable of frightening you than anything you're going to read on the page. When you're reading a scary story, the gaps are more frightening than what they actually write about. And I find that's to be really true with Doc Boggs. You know, his version of Pretty Polly doesn't lay out a lot of information about, you know, what the backstory is. You know, there's a guy, there's a girl, you know, she may or may not be pregnant. She believes that this man wants to marry her. Suddenly, they ride on the horse over a ridge, and there's a newly dug grave for her. You know, that's where you get to. It's suddenly, you know, you're right there. And then she's in the grave, and he's covering her up with dirt. You know, it's horrifying. There's very little information there, precious little information there. And my mind has taken that, like that one song, and just like that haunts me a lot, you know. And when you listen to Doc Boggs sing it, it's you know, his voice is one of those voices that I find it's like steel, you know. It's got that edge to it. He's telling this story, and it bothers me. You know, the way he tells the story. He's just one of my heroes, I think. And in his life, too, you know, I've listened to a lot of Doc Boggs and interviews about him and read everything that Mike Seeger had to say about him, you know, because Mike Seeger was the man who kind of found him and brought him out of the coal mine in the 60s and brought him back to music. And it's fascinating. I love characters like that. Frank Hutchison is another one, and you know, that just kind of disappeared into the coal mines and flowed back and forth, you know.
There's the movie that focused on Fat Possum Records and mm-hmm. You See Me Laughing, which mostly starred Junior Kimbrough and
R.L. Burnside.
But the one guy that really struck me, both the story and his music, not that they all didn't, was that A.Z. Payton, the one that they'd have to go wait for a rain day so he would agree to come and record because he wasn't working in the fields.
That's, you know, right.
It's amazing to me, some of those kinds of stories.
I love that stuff. And you know, when you really think about it, I think that, you know, maybe that's, you know, everybody, especially with folk music and folk kind of traditions, everybody's eligible, I think. You know, everybody's eligible to make music and make a song and play music. It's all of ours, you know. I've been really lucky. I've been able to do this without doing much else, you know. But if I wasn't in this position and I, you know, still had my job, I would still play. I'd play all the time. It's music that is for all of us. You know, the idea that it's kind of an exclusive kind of property, I guess, of one set of people or another set of people or one geographical area or another, I think is not right. You know, it's folk music. It's for the folks. It's all of ours. We can all play it. We can all participate in it. And maybe that's the way it should be, because I've heard, like A.C. Payton, you know, guys that they've got jobs, they've got lives, they've got families and kids. They can play, make up a song to make you cry. They're just not interested in going any farther with it, and that's really admirable, I think.
Henry Goes to the Bank from the 2012 release from Charlie Parr called Barn Swallow. A little longer interview than we usually have, but boy, sometimes people's musicians' stories just grab you and you don't know how to make it shorter, really. This is Barbara Jean and the title track from her Great Escape record, Center Stage, Minnesota.
Long.
Songs from 2013 releases there from Terry and Nim, project centering around Terry Longton. That was Now This Is Then is the release, and we heard Freedom Bird. And before that, we heard from Barbara Jean, the title track to her 2013 release, The Great Escape. We're going to head out now. Taking us out of the show today is a Slaptown Music Productions release from The Fattening Frogs. The 12 Bars release is a very recent release, and this one is Walking Blues from Fattening Frogs on Center Stage, Minnesota.
I want you.